faggot, faggot down the street.
Faggot, faggot down the street.
You can't hide your still dead meat.
Meeting Barry changed my life. Barry was my first relationship as a woman.
I won't run when you come, cause I've taken a bomb for the last time.
I got to wonder why I've become so isolated. I got to wonder why I'm victimized and devastated.
We like Mike, what's not to like?
He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while.
I like Mike.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Conscientious consent votes move New South Wales gay men toward equality. Folk, industrial, and homo pop spring from the audiophile and the writer and soldier's girl at the heart of a Don't Ask, Do Kill cable drama. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Ralph Radabaugh.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 24th, 2003. With a majority of more than 60%, the Parliament of the Australian state of New South Wales this week gave initial approval to lowering the age of consent for sex between men to match that for other couples. An amendment to the government's bill removed a clause making it retroactive, but its state policy not to prosecute former violations once they're decriminalized. The bill moves next to the state's upper house, where it's expected to pass by just a few votes.
Among the Australian states, only NSW and the Northern Territory still have age of consent laws that differentiate by the gender of the parties. NSW makes sex between men legal only if both are 18 years old, compared to 16 for heterosexual and lesbian acts. Age of consent violations in NSW are punishable by up to 10 years imprisonment.
Free to vote their consciences, about 80% of the members of the ruling Australian Labor Party were joined by 40% of the opposition Liberal Party members and half the independents in supporting equalization.
But in the long and spirited debate, the biggest drama was provided by Russell Turner, who voted in favor despite his National Party's determination to oppose as a bloc. Turner told the Parliament that his son Scott is gay and said, "I would hope in supporting this bill today that slowly some of the ignorance and some of the fear that we have in our community will dissipate."
National Party leader Andrew Stoner, a vigorous opponent of equalization, said Turner had been given permission to break ranks. He said, "Russell's shown a lot of courage. He's also shown a lot of love for his two sons and daughter, and that's what it's all about. A man who loves his children no matter what." Scott Turner told reporters, "I am so proud of him as a man, a father, and a politician." Turner's office in the rural Orange District was flooded with calls supporting his vote.
Equalization has long been a top target of NSW's gay and lesbian activists. One colorful action this week was staged in Sydney by a group of gay and lesbian university students. With banners reading 16 for all, they smooched at length in front of a statue of Queen Victoria.
More than 100 people rallied in St. John, New Brunswick this week to protest anti-gay remarks made by their member of the Canadian Parliament, Elsie Wayne. The Conservative Party's deputy leader had ranted against same-gender marriages on the floor of the Commons, saying, "Why do they have to be out here in public, always debating that they want to call it marriage? Do not expect us to endorse marriage because they live together. If they are going to live together, they can go live together and shut up about it." Wayne later issued a statement saying she hadn't intended to offend anyone, but only to state her support for the historic definition of marriage. The Tory caucus has rejected calls to strip her of her deputy leader role.
A further protest is planned for Toronto's upcoming Pride Parade. Enza Anderson, who last year ran for the leadership of the right-wing Canadian Alliance Party, said she's heard from a number of fellow drag artists who want to respond to Wayne's rhetorical query, "Why are gay men dressed up as women on floats?" In the great Mardi Gras tradition, they're planning to impersonate Wayne on a float in the Pride March, or as one headline put it, "Floatload of queens to Wayne on Elsie's parade." Noting Wayne's penchant for sequined sweaters, Anderson said, "I think she's impersonating us."
A member of the Scottish Parliament, previously denounced for reported anti-gay remarks, this week signed his support for a bill to extend marital rights to domestic partners, including same-gender couples. 72-year-old Central Region MSP John Swinburne of the Scottish Senior Citizens Unity Party told the BBC that he doesn't recall making the remarks attributed to him at a public meeting last week, including proudly labeling himself homophobic and calling gays sick. He said he would humbly apologize to anyone upset by them. He says he has a live and let live position towards gays and lesbians. He said that if he were homophobic, he wouldn't have signed the civil partnership bill introduced by openly gay Green MSP Patrick Harvey.
Swinburne's outburst followed the coming out of MSP Margaret Smith. Amid numerous rumors, Smith released a statement saying she was involved with a woman who recently left her husband. The Edinburgh West MSP herself has been separated from her own husband for about 3 years, but had previously denied any other relationship. Smith's gay supportive Liberal Democratic Party colleagues issued a statement saying they all gave her their full support.
But gay-supportive Republican U.S. Congressmember from Florida and Senate hopeful Mark Foley had a different response to being outed this month by columnist in the Broward Palm Beach New Times, an alternative weekly. Bachelor Foley, who represents West Palm Beach, has faced similar rumors for a decade, but has refused to answer reporters' questions about his orientation, saying it's irrelevant to his work, that he was raised to believe some things shouldn't be discussed in public, that he's entitled to a personal life, and that people can draw whatever conclusions they wish. This week, he told reporters he believed the gay baiting was a revolting tactic of Democratic activists. Florida's Democratic Party chair not only denied but denounced Foley's accusation, while openly gay Democratic activist David Mixner suggested that if anyone was attacking Foley, it's conservative Republicans. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, no friend to gays, called the rumor-mongering campaign despicable and hailed five-termer Foley as an invaluable member of the Republican caucus.
Also in Florida this week, the state Senate almost unanimously passed a bill to empower the Attorney General to file civil rights lawsuits against businesses. The bill moves next to Republican Governor Jeb Bush, the president's brother, who's expected to sign it. The lone Senate opponent, Leesburg Republican Anna Cowan, struggled hard against the measure, saying it posed a threat to religious groups and the Boy Scouts for discriminating against gays, lesbians, and transgenders.
California transgenders have what's believed to be their first statewide legal aid group in the U.S., with the official launch this week of the Transgender Law Center in San Francisco. It began as a project of and continues to operate in conjunction with the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
And in Connecticut, Wesleyan University has announced that in the coming school year, it will offer what's believed to be the first special housing area for transgenders on any U.S. campus. Up to a dozen students will share one floor of a dorm in what's called a gender-blind facility.
C.A. Tripp, author of the influential 1975 book The Homosexual Matrix, died last week of cancer at the age of 83. After working with sex researcher Alfred Kinsey, New York City psychologist Tripp wrote the comprehensive scholarly review of the activities and treatment of gays across cultures, which argued that homosexuality was not an illness nor subject to cure. The pioneering book sold about 500,000 copies. Shortly before his death, Tripp completed work with Lewis Gannett on an upcoming biography of Abraham Lincoln, which considers if the Civil War president was gay.
Pha Si Rung, the Rainbow Sky Association of Thailand, announced that it's about to become that nation's first officially registered gay group. Founded in 2001, the Bangkok-based group with branches in Chiang Mai and Pattaya describes its goals as HIV/AIDS prevention among the men who have sex with men population and to promote love, understanding, equality, and dignity for the Thai gay community. Rainbow Sky provides public education on gay and lesbian issues in cooperation with the national lesbian group Ajari.
And finally, Washington, D.C.'s Kennedy Center this week announced that the winner of the prestigious annual Mark Twain Prize for American Humor is lesbian Lily Tomlin. Tomlin first came to national attention in the late 1960s on TV's Laugh-In with her snippy telephone operator Ernestine. She went on to win 6 Emmys, a Grammy, and an Oscar nomination in 1975 for her supporting role in the film Nashville. Currently, in addition to her recurring role on NBC's The West Wing, Tomlin is appearing in a revival of her one-woman show, The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, written by her longtime partner Jane Wagner, one of two shows that won her Tony Awards on Broadway. The Kennedy Center announcement of the award to be presented at a televised gala in October said, "Lily Tomlin, like Mark Twain, offers her genius wholeheartedly as she levels the playing field all across society and evokes the most healing of all responses, laughter. Her comedy is meaningful because, like Twain's, it expresses truths we already recognize unconsciously, and she allows us to embrace our frailties without shame or embarrassment."
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 24th, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Ralph Radabaugh.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Boy, howdy. We'll see the world with moderate extremism through the music of three new artists later in the program.
If your heart always did what a normal heart should do, if you always play a part instead of being who you really are.
It's been nearly 4 years since the horrendous gay-bashing murder of PFC Barry Winchell sent shockwaves even beyond U.S. borders. Although Winchell's tragic death at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, was an indictment of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that prevented him from reporting escalating harassment, there's been no change in that policy. Winchell's parents have continued to hold the military responsible in the case, and in mid-May, they met with leaders of the Senate Armed Services Committee to oppose the pending promotion of Major General Robert T. Clark, their son's commanding officer. And so, Soldier's Girl, a Showtime cable network film about PFC Winchell's life and death, could not be more timely. Screenwriter Ron Niswanger and Winchell's transgendered girlfriend, Calpurnia Adams, share the art and the reality of the story with This Way Out's Steve Pride.
In the pre-dawn hours of July 5, 1999, inside an infantry barracks at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, 21-year-old Private First Class Barry Winchell was beaten to death with a baseball bat. This horrific murder at the hands of fellow soldiers was the culmination of ongoing harassment that, under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Winchell was unable to report without jeopardizing his military career. A new film called Soldier's Girl recounts Winchell's courtship of transgendered entertainer Calpurnia Adams and the events leading up to his tragic death. The screenplay for this poignant film is by Ron Niswanger, the man who wrote Philadelphia.
There were two murderers, Justin Fisher and Calvin Glover. Justin was the motivator, and Calvin was almost, we referred to him eventually as the weapon.
Do you think a homosexual could be loyal to his unit?
No, I don't see how a homosexual can be loyal.
Because he'd always have this agenda to try and hump you, right?
Right. I mean, he'd always be trying to have sex with you and stuff.
So you should probably talk to Diaz about it.
Okay. Talk to him about what?
Well, about having homosexuals in our company.
We do?
One of the guys in our unit spends a lot of time at this club for deviants.
Yeah?
And I'm pretty sure that he gave someone fellatio in that club.
Well, tell me who it is, because I can take care of that sort of thing.
When you start to look at Justin and Calvin's backgrounds, look at where they came from, what their family lives were like before they went into the military, what you see is you see two young men of different degrees of sociopathy. Calvin is borderline retarded and probably could be manipulated into doing anything. Justin is, as many psychopathic people can be, is brilliant and incredibly charming, very manipulative, and I think ultimately really, really, really tortured. And I think it was his deep, 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 deep self-loathing that drove him to help murder Barry Winchell. And also, I think what happened is that Justin found in Barry Winchell someone who accepted him. There was even an incident when Justin and Barry got into a fight in their room, and Justin had picked up a metal dustpan and had beaten Barry in the head with it and caused Barry had to get several stitches. And then they were asked, each were asked individually, after that incident, do you want to separate? And they each said, according to the sergeant who asked the question, no, we like each other. It was just a fight that got out of hand. I saw that as Barry's incredible compassion for everybody around him. And that he had compassion for Justin Fisher, too. And, you know, unfortunately, perhaps he shouldn't have. You know, perhaps if he had had a little less compassion and a little less acceptance, he'd be alive.
But Soldier's Girl is not just about Barry Winchell's death. It's about his approach to life, and perhaps most of all, it's a love story.
My name's Calpurnia Adams. People like to be able to put you in a box and then put you on the shelf and move on, but I think that's why transgender women scare society at large. They're, what does this mean about me if I'm attracted to her? And it's tough, you know, because Barry had only ever dated girls, and he was, as far as I knew, only attracted to women. And I really hesitate at calling Barry gay, but since I was pre-operative at the time, a lot of people have their own thoughts about what his sexuality was. Meeting Barry changed my life, in that Barry was my first relationship as a woman. He was the first man to just sort of take me at face value as a woman and treat me that way after Barry's murder and all the media attention. I felt like I was in a cocoon and somebody had just ripped it open before I was ready, and everybody was just like looking at me and saying, you know, she doesn't look that much like a woman, or she's not that pretty, or what did he see in her? And it was really one more awful thing on top of the whole awful situation to be judged like that before you're ready.
One irony of what happened to PFC Winchell is that he loved the military.
Barry wanted to be a helicopter pilot, so he was studying for a special program above and beyond his regular duties, and he was already, you know, top gun in his company, one of the best at his artillery specialty. Barry would sit in my dressing room underneath my rack of clothes and just study his manuals while I would go on stage and stuff. He was so committed, and they really let a good one slip through their fingers by not doing things the way they should have on that face.
Faggot, faggot, down the street.
Faggot, faggot, down the street.
You can't hide your still dead meat.
You can't hide your still dead meat.
The film is about unconditional love, which I actually think is the most important thing that we can make art about.
Screenwriter Ron Niswonner.
There was a point Calpurnia Adams knew was coming in a relationship with Barry, which is that there's a point at which they were going to have to really face the fact that when they got into bed together, there were two penises. And she worried and worried and worried about it. And when finally they face that moment, Barry is full of acceptance. Calpurnia continued past that point to say, you know, I'm going to have the operation someday. And Barry Winchell said, no, don't. You don't need to have this operation. I like you just the way you are. Calpurnia believes that she'll never hear that again. As a matter of fact, she has proceeded with her surgery because she believes that she was never going to meet anyone like Barry who would accept her like that. But to me, that's such an example of complete acceptance and unconditional love. So I'd rather that people take away that example of love. If they can take away more than that, I hope they also get pretty angry about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The people who created Don't Ask, Don't Tell bear some responsibility for Barry Winchell's death. There is no question in my mind.
Gay, straight, or transgendered, the message of Soldier's Girl is universal.
There's a whole range of sexuality, and all we really want is to live our lives and be happy and have love, and anybody can empathize with that.
In December 1999, 18-year-old Private Calvin Glover was found guilty of murdering PFC Barry Winchell and sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole. 1 month later, Winchell's former friend and roommate, Justin Fisher, 26, was sentenced to 12 and a half years in prison for his involvement in the murder. Don't Ask, Don't Tell remains the official policy of the U.S. military. Soldier's Girl airs Saturday, May 31st, on the Showtime Cable Network, and will repeat several times throughout June. For more information on Calpurnia Adams, visit her website at calpurnia.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Oh, it's got to start with the beat of one.
what we don't have is time.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
It's always an honor to introduce new queer artists to our international listening audience, and this month's audiophile features a triple crown of premier CDs representing an eclectic array of musical styles.
When the floorboards underfoot were caving in, and the walls were filled with foam, and the chemicals were gone, I never thought I'd ever feel this way again.
See the World is the title of the debut album by Los Angeles artist Phil Dutra. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. Phil's album is definitely influenced by pop music of the 60s, but his soul-searching lyrics brings it up to date.
I guess I describe my music as melodic pop folk, I guess is the best label I could give it, although I hate giving it any label. I think it's closer to VH1 than it is to MTV. There's a little bit of New York influence in my music, a little bit of Southern influence in my music.
Your sun refuses to rise. The light is
Find out more about Phil Dutra and his CD, See the World, at www.phildutra.com. That's www.phildutra.com.
I tend to have a very eclectic style. My work really ranges anywhere from industrial rock to ambient electronica to anywhere else. I mean, really the only thing I could say that holds it all together is that it's always all about trying to find something new, some new idea or some new way of doing things.
It's a quarter past two, go to Second Avenue and Fourth Street. And there by the lamppost you can find me. I'll sell you a dime or a little bit of my time, discreet. Go around the block, get a little. Let's go back to your place, baby.
The artist calls himself Virgo, and the album is called Modern Extremism.
He combines many different styles to create soundscapes that have been described as rough, raunchy, and addictive.
I mean, I guess my stuff is for pretty much anybody whose thoughts and tastes sort of run outside the mainstream.
I got to wonder why I've become so isolated. I got to wonder why I'm victimized and devastated. Play my exit music now. I'll take my final bow. Lights out, bring down the curtain, please. I got to wonder why I've become so isolated.
You can learn more about the album Modern Extremism by Virgo at www.intraxis.com. That's www.intraxis.com.
like Mike, what's not to like?
We like Mike, what's not to like?
He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while. I like Mike. He plays hardball, that's my Mike.
He's always playing hardball.
That's my Mike. Got the leather, got the lumber. He's a true all-star. A permanent pirate in his muscle car. He's always playing hardball. That's my Mike.
He's always playing hardball.
That's my Mike. I like Mike. What's not to like?
We like Mike. What's not to like?
He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while. I like Mike.
Coming out of Los Angeles is another debut album that is, well, completely unique, irreverent, funny, in your face, and downright entertaining.
It includes lyrics that are catchy and sometimes over the top, dealing openly with being a gay man. It's called Boy Howdy, and is brought to us by Jay Spears.
My musical style is, just me singing about other guys, my exes mostly. So the genre is what I call homo pop, and there seems to be an audience for it.
Do you think life's greatest goal is to be a macho, macho man? Well, I beg to differ. My challenge is stiffer, to fall in love, and that's my plan.
Find out more about Jay Spears and his album, Boy Howdy, at www.jayspears.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Ralph Radabaugh, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Michael Callen performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on CJLY Nelson, British Columbia, KNON Dallas, Texas, WRPI Troy, New York, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.